but the Likud government has rejected it. Israel is in continuous violation of international law in establishing Israeli settlements in the occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza. In 1982, Israel launched an unprovoked war of aggression in Lebanon, resulting in thousands of civilian casualties, mostly Palestinian refugees. This was the final blow which destroyed Lebanon. Israel is also the unrepentant recipient of the condemnation of most human rights organizations in the world. Not only did the UN vote represent an unprecedented rebuke to Israel and the US, but it is reported to have been one of the most enthusiastic votes on record in the General Assembly of the UN, yet one suspects a deeper reason for this enthusiasm than simply the UN's disgust and disappointment over Israel's conduct. It may indeed be the world's reaction to the righteous hypocrisies of the Likud leaders, the spectacle of terrorists condemning terrorism, racists ranting about racism, and blaming the whole world for the Holocaust, while preaching the genocide of Amalek with his women and children. Even these, however, may not account for the emotional nature of the UN vote. Perhaps it was the mournful sight of the United States of America, the standard bearer for the free world, sitting in the UN, headbent, alone and shackled to Israel. Religious fanaticism in the nuclear age, while the world's attention, over the past decades of the Cold War, has been focused upon the superpower rivalry and the danger of a nuclear war, a far greater threat to the peace of the world has been growing almost without notice. Most people have taken comfort in the belief that neither the US nor the Soviet Union would be crazy enough to actually start a nuclear war. Mutual assured destruction, MAD, was the essence of the deterrent. Most of the concern has been that one or the other of the nuclear powers might accidentally fire a nuclear missile. Therefore, elaborate steps have been taken by both governments to prevent such an occurrence. But what kind of nightmares would the world be having if Gaddafi possessed a large nuclear arsenal, one of the finest air forces in the world, the highest level of military technology existing, and boasted that he could strike his enemies anywhere on Earth, and would do so if, in his judgment, any nation threatened his security? Yet, this is precisely what the fanatics in the Likud government are in a position to do, have threatened to do, and have in fact done, in the strike against the Iraqi nuclear reactor. It is abundantly clear that the Likud government is dominated by a dangerous group of religious fanatics, whose primary intent and purpose, according to Huckabee, is to amass political power and hold completely the reins of the government of Israel. This is in preparation for the final triumph of Jewish history, redemption and messianism, which Huckabee says threaten Israel's survival. The explicit assertion that a certain period is the beginning of the redemption arouses a hope that can only be destructive. Paradoxically, no idea poses a greater menace to the survival of the state of Israel than that which links Zionism with redemption and messianism, emphasis applied. Huckabee believes that the ideas of redemption and messianism are portents of disaster, because the disappointment caused by a failure of the Messiah to appear may be so unbearable that the consequences cannot be predicted. Huckabee explains, the ideas of redemption and messianism are a portent of disaster in two respects. In the short term, the messianic idea is a distraction from the need to consider reality, and encourages unrealistic and rash policies. What is the benefit of a messianism whose practical result is that through the annexation of territories Israel becomes an Arab country or nearly so? Some would defend the new messianism by presenting Zionism as a manifestation of a natural historical redemption. But what is the benefit of a messianism without a Messiah? The disappointment caused by disasters not mitigated by heavenly salvation can have serious consequences. A widespread obsession with messianism is liable to end in grief. Mikahane is certain that disaster is not on the cards. The state of Israel is not a political creature, it is a religious creature. No power in the world could have prevented its establishment, and no force can destroy it. p. 244. For him, history is not a sequence of detached and chance events. There is a plan for history. The Jew is coming home for the third and final time. The first redemption was the redemption from Egypt, the second was that of Ezra, and the third redemption has no end. The verses from Midrash are guarantee enough for him. Emphasis supplied. It is highly doubtful that the Jewish community in the US is at all aware of the intensity of the feelings of the religious extremists and the danger they pose to Israel if their plans are carried out. Huckabee doubts that even most Israelis are fully aware of the situation. Even many Jews fail to grasp the strength of the faith and the imminent arrival of the Messiah among some religious extremists, including members of Gush Emunim. Most Israelis are simply unaware that these circles deny any possibility that the Messiah might yet be long in coming, may even not come, and the extent to which this faith supports them through hardships, prepares them for catastrophes, and encourages their adventures. They scorn all who doubt that the Messiah is coming soon, and see tangible signs of his coming in every Zionist success and military victory. This faith also has a functional significance. Without it, there is little sense to the settlement movement. In addition, the more circumstances contradict their political ideas, the more it becomes evident that the territories cannot be held, that the Arabs are multiplying and will attain a majority, that the Arabs cannot be expelled and are rebelling, the more tenacious their belief that the Messiah's coming is imminent. Placing the ideas of redemption and messianism at the center radically changes the Zionist ideology and the goal of the establishment of the Jewish state. The goal of Zionism ceases to be the solution for the historical vulnerability of the Jews, and becomes the establishment of a state that will serve as a means to bring on the redemption. The fact that there were Jews who plotted to blow up the Dome of the Rock should be a source of grave concern. It cannot be assumed that those who were brought to trial were alone. Might a group opposed to eventual negotiations for resolving the Arab-Israeli conflict plant a bomb in the mosques as a means to derail them? Given the psychosis prevalent in some circles in the country, the chance that something like this will happen is not negligible. In this context, we cannot dismiss the significance of the widely disseminated aerial photograph of the old city in which the mosques were airbrushed out of existence and replaced by a model of the Second Temple. Such a picture is apt to inspire yearnings for its realization. Jewish extremists call the mosques an abomination, and this designation itself seemingly requires action to remove them. In a yeshiva adjacent to the Temple Mount, garments for the temple priests are already being woven in anticipation that they will be needed in the near future. In Othari Yeshivat, the detailed laws of animal sacrifices have become a popular topic of study, as if they will soon have contemporary relevance. Before, the Messiah was a hope, now he has become a messianic expectations have added a whole new politico-religious element to the Middle East powder keg. Irrationality is now, more than ever, the norm in the camp of the religious extremists. Huckabee sees it as one of the greatest threats to peace. One belief in the religious outlook goes far beyond the evaluation of the Jabotinsky ethos, that morality permits the Jews to behave as they wish, the belief that the Messiah's arrival is imminent. If the Messiah is on his way, there is nothing to fear, he will bail us out of all misfortunes and grant Israel the final victory. The messianic idea serves as a sort of insurance policy against all complications, countering all fears that morality might be a stumbling block on the road to desired goals. To many religious Jews, the successes of Zionism are signs that the redemption has begun. Proponents of this view hold that Israel need have no fear of future wars, and can even provoke them at will. Rabbi Shlomo Avina has written, "We must live in this land even at the price of war. Moreover, even if there is peace, we must instigate wars of liberation in order to conquer it." Rz. P. 11. He does not specify what additional territory should be conquered, but his words are clearly based on the assumption that everything is possible and all is permitted. It does not occur to him that going to war is a dangerous gamble. One can understand why soldiers and other young Israelis like Micah Haines' thesis that Israel is indeed a mighty power, but its leadership is too hesitant to make proper use of its forces to solve all Israel's problems with one blow, eliminating terrorism and expelling the Arabs. All of this comes close to the spirit of the Jabotinsky Begin ethos, the solution in a single energetic event. Emphasis supplied. The important thing that must be kept in mind is that these are not the rantings and ravings of a Khomeini. These are people who boast of the power to strike any target on earth. They can start a war against anybody, at any time, for any reason, and they want the world to know it.